Hello and welcome to everyone listening to the Written in Melanin podcast, the place where you come to get your weekly dose of melanated creativity. I'm your host, CM Lockhart, an author of fantasy books featuring black girls who aren't all that nice and the owner of the Melanin Library, an online database of books written by black authors. And in this space, I share with you everything I've learned on my journey as a black and indie author. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to a special bonus episode of the Written in Melanin podcast, you guys. Today, I am here with Akindele and Nadine Decker. Akindele is a poet, writer, and historian, while Nadine works for a charity and is studying for her Master's of Science in Organizational Psychology, which is actually pretty impressive, you guys. Together, they have written two children's books that preserve the folktales of their grandfather and share the rich history surrounding it. And today, they are joining me on the podcast to discuss the importance of preserving our stories for future generations. Welcome to the podcast, you guys.
Hi.
So I am so glad to have you guys here. I'm so glad to have you guys on the podcast. Y'all are actually the first children's authors that I've had on the podcast, so I'm really excited to talk to you guys. That being said, let's just go ahead and introduce you guys to our listeners. So I know there are two of you. Normally I'm directing these questions at one person, so whoever feels comfortable answering can jump in. But you guys have two books out currently, and we talked about this a little bit off screen before we started recording. Y'all actually released these books at the same time. So can y'all tell our listeners, a little bit about your children's books, why all the animals no longer live together, and why Mr. Bird chose the air?
Thank you, Chelsea. And thank you for having us as well. So these two books are actually, you know, as you stated, they were published on the same day. We actually, both of us have a book that our grandfather wrote in the 1950s. And we both grew up reading these folk tales. And we, you know, we thought it would be nice to make individual stories of all the different folk tales contained in that book. These are folktales from Sierra Leone, West Africa, which is where I was born, and where our grandparents and our families are from as well. So we wanted to introduce that to this generation. And so we thought, why not?
I mean, honestly, I love that you guys have, because, you know, as an African-American, I've never been to Africa. I know that I have connections to it, but I can't trace it back that far. So the fact that you guys are bringing stories and making them available to people who, like, A, want the stories in future generations, but also, you know, older generations like me, I ain't gonna lie, where it's just like there's a connection there that I haven't been able to have before. So it's just like, this is really cool. Like, I'm really excited about these books. So that being said, like, what kind of led you guys to take your grandfather's stories and, you know, repackage them and bring them forth in a new generation? Like, why was that so important to you guys?
I think some of the writings that he did back in the day, as much as we love them and we know how important they are, some of it benefited from being edited so that it was a little bit more palatable for today's younger reader. And just so that we could also have a project to work on together and keep it at the forefront, keep it current. So I think it was something that was important to do and also very interesting to do.
I can imagine. So you said it was important for you guys to work on it together. Like, are you two, like, really close?
We are. We are. Nadine's dad and my dad are actually brothers. So, you know, we spoke a lot about this. We were both also very passionate about our grandfather as well. You know, it's a very tight-knit legacy, I guess you can call it, that's gone from generation to generation. And, you know, we talked a lot. We talked a lot about these stories, about the fact that we both grew up around these stories. For me personally, it was my first book ever. So before being introduced to the Disney characters and such, these were the characters that I was introduced to. So I think just having that common upbringing around these stories and relating to these characters and our grandfather, there was a lot there that we could talk about, you know. So
yeah. I love that.
But yeah. She's definitely one of my favorite, if not my favorite cousin.
Yeah, and I think Akindele was also fortunate to have been born in Sierra Leone, whereas myself, I was born in the UK. So yes, I knew my roots, but the literature that I grew up with was, you know, from school and very Eurocentric. So it's nice to then get a perspective that is more culturally appropriate, but then also to know that it comes from your own lineage was just really important for my life, really.
No, I definitely understand that. That's part of the reason why I do this whole podcast, why I do everything that I do, because that representation is really important, and having a connection to what you see and what you read and seeing yourself in those stories is really important. And when you grow up in a very, like you said, Eurocentric culture, it can be sometimes like you just feel like you're kind of removed from it. Like you feel like you become the other in the stories. And so I really love that you guys are not only bringing these stories from your culture, but also giving these children from this generation like stories that they can identify with and see themselves in. And also, you know, a different, something outside of, like you said, the Disney stories that we're all kind of familiar with. And at this point, I'm going to say it, it's kind of played out. There's 100,000 remakes of Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast. And I love that you guys are bringing something that I'm not going to say is necessarily new, but it's new to us, at least over here in the United States. So, and I'm excited for that, because I have a nephew, and I'm just like, the minute that you guys reached out to me, I was like, oh, he would absolutely love these stories. So like, at the time of recording this, in case you're listening to this in the future, it is like October, and I'm like already like, oh, this would be a really great Christmas gift for him. He's gonna love it. He's gonna love it. But that being said, I know that working with a co-author, like writing a book in general is difficult, but like working with a co-author is a new challenge, and then working with a co-author who's also your family, so you kind of have to get along at the end of the day because y'all are related. How did that work out? Like, how did y'all break up the responsibilities of creating the books? I'll say
it was amazing, to be honest. Nadine actually made it pretty easy. Consider the fact that she's in London as well. And I'm in the US, so there's a time difference, there's, you know, priorities and things like that. But I think we placed the passion in the front. We knew what we wanted to achieve at the end. It was about, you know, it was in a way less about us, even though the interactions was about us. But the work that we were doing was about our grandfather, about, like you said, passing on the stories from, you know, known audiences in Sierra Leone to audiences here in the U.S. or in London. So it was bigger than us. And I think the fact that we're family, and, you know, we're also two young folks as well. So, you know, it helped. But it was easy. I'm sure it might be difficult for others, for other reasons. But I think if you put your passion, you know, if you put the actual vision ahead of everything, you should be fine.
I love your optimism, because I imagine writing a book with my cousin, and I'm just like, I got a lot of them. I just can't imagine it. No.
I think what he said about the purpose is the main thing that helps us to ensure what we're doing is done. Mm-hmm. Really, at the end of the day, it was the purpose behind it all.
Absolutely. So what was that sparking moment that made you guys think like, okay, it's not just a story for us, it's not just a story for our family and where we come from, this is something that there is a greater purpose in this, there is a greater reason that why we need to do this and bring it forth? Like, what was that moment for you guys? Was it, and I asked this, like, is it the same moment, or did you each have like a collective moment where you're like, these stories are important. Let me get in touch with my cousin to see what we can do. Like, how did, I'm curious. I just want to know, like, how did that come about? Because it's just like, y'all, were y'all just talking one day and y'all like just hanging out with the family cookout? It was just like, yeah, you know what we should do? We should turn these books into to children's books and market them. Or was it like a deeper moment than that?
I think Akindele has always been involved in the history of our grandfather, you know, searching our family tree and roots and things like that, and highlighting the works that people have done. So our discussions have always been based around, just the works that family members have done and have accomplished in the past. And I think it was him that came to me and said, you know what, I'm thinking about doing this. Would you want to be involved? And I said, why not? 100%. It would just definitely be nice to, you know, put his work out there again. And also, I think we've got other plans to expand on what he already accomplished back in the day. And I think it's just paying homage to the works that he did. We just knew it would be a good look.
Absolutely. I'm just...
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it you know, we're kind of not, I guess, saying a lot about our grandfather. He did quite a bit, both around the language. You know, our local language in Sierra Leone is called Creole. So it's not Creole with the C-R, but it's Creole with a K-R-I-O. And he was actually one of the first to develop the writing system for Creole.
That's impressive.
So there's a lot of work, a lot of studies that's been done about him. And between, you know, my family and her family, there's a lot of records also. So we're constantly having discussions, you know, every now and then about, you know, grandpa, you know, have you read this book or have you read that book? So I think the folk tales was that thing that we knew we could tackle. You know, it's hard to go after some of the other stuff that he's done, but the folk tales was like, yeah, we can do this. We can definitely do it.
I can respect that. It's just like, you got to start somewhere, and I can see that being like, okay, we can start here and then work our way up. But that being said, since we're talking about folk tales, do you guys have a favorite? Because I know that you said at the beginning of this that the book that you got had multiple in it, and that the two that you guys have published are just the two that you've started with. So do you guys have a favorite folktale from it? And the two books that you published, are they one of them? If that makes sense.
Oh, I would say the one that we published is my favorite, only because it's the one that I've looked into the most with an adult lens. I think that's probably the reason why. I definitely need to go back and go over them again as well, especially now that I can read the language more appropriately than when I was younger. I think they all have a different story to tell, and they all intertwine with each other. So we definitely have to look into putting those out as well.
Yeah. One of the two is definitely my favorite as well. He has about 26 in the book itself. So these are just two. But honestly, I loved every one of them just because they were different. You know, like Nadine said, they kind of hit different things, and you kind of love them because of a different reason. But definitely, I think for me, why Mr. Bird Chose the Air is probably my favorite. Just I think because also outside, I mean, with Disney, with, you know, I keep bringing up Disney, I'm sorry, but with Disney, you see the characters, you see all this cartoons and things like that. But with folktales, especially if you're reading them, you know, you're counting on the author to sort of bring out the animation in the characters themselves. So for me, I like the songs that my grandfather had in some of these stories. You know, the songs are in our language. It's in Creole. Some of them are very well known outside of the book, outside of the folk tales. So it's almost like, you know, like, you know what this song means, really means, when you're singing it. And the song that's in that book is one that I love the most. So, yeah.
Okay. Now I'm even more excited to, like, get it, because at first I was just going to get the book and just, like, send it to my nephew and be like, oh, Merry Christmas. And now I'm like, no, I'm going to get it. I'm going to read it. And then I'm going to, like, send it to him. It's going to be a slightly used book, because now I'm curious about what's in it. But you mentioned, Nadine, about looking at folktales from, like, an adult perspective now. And that kind of made me wonder, like, what is that like for you guys? Because obviously, for the most part, folktales are stories meant for children. Because, like you said, the characters are very animated. We've got talking animals, right? As adults, we are all aware that animals don't actually talk. But, you know, there's always, like, a lesson that goes into these things. So what's it like to have heard these stories as a child, but then, like, as an adult now, you're going back and not only are you, you know, re-experiencing the story, but, like, you're re-presenting it in a way and having to work with it and understand it in a way that you maybe didn't have to when you were a child?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, firstly, re-experiencing them as an adult just helped you to realize that, yes, you may not have understood exactly what was being read to you, what you were reading at the time, but it did help form your mentality and the way you go about things, or your values, for example. And then now representing them and, you know, making it more palatable for today's young readers. Again, it's like, how do I want to help shape the future generation, and how can I make sure that these old school values are going to be, you know, instilled in the children today? So it was a really, you know, you had to really look back and just see how influential they are, and you don't realize at the time, but I can definitely appreciate it now.
What about you?
For me, definitely the same reasons that Nadine mentioned. I also think after we've written the book, we make a point to, because it's family, we make a point to talk about family, to talk about the characters in the book who represent actual family members, our grandfather, our grand aunt, our great-great-great-great-grandfather, because that's our grandfather's grandfather and his grandmother. So, you know, the setting itself takes place in the 1920s. Takes place in the 1920s, and his grandfather, Grandpa TC, in the book, he was born in 1844. Mm-hmm. You know, so for me, I think I also, for both of us, I feel like we, because we know the family history, we know the family trees, we know what Grandpa TC's life was like in his time, we're able to sort of appreciate then as well. You know, look at these folk tales, not only for the folk tales and the animals, the talking animals and stuff in there, but also the carriers of the folk tales as well. You know, Grandpa TC, our grandfather, Grandpa Tommy, you know, what made them tell these stories? What made them preserve these stories? You know, we look at Sierra Leone in the 1920s or Sierra Leone in the 1840s, you know, things like that. So I think it helps us to also look outside of the stories themselves and think about the carriers of the stories.
I love that there's so much history in these folktales, because I feel like that's what makes it special, because it's just like, again, I'm just over here basking at, like, how much history and connections to y'all family y'all have, and how, like, fortunate y'all are. I can't talk. I sound so country right now. Oh my God. I'm sorry. just how fortunate y'all are to have that connection and to be able to pull from it and explore it and present it. And I'm excited for this, but this is not about me being hype. Okay, I'm gonna stay focused to the question. But as y'all were talking, like you said, the carriers of these folktales, and Nadine, how you're mentioning that, you know, they shape you and they like kind of live with you, even if you don't fully understand it when it was first introduced to you. And that kind of brings up the question, because like now y'all are basically the carriers of these folktales. You know, y'all have taken it upon yourselves to, you know, carry on this mantle and to pass it forward. And it's just kind of like, what lessons, I guess, do you hope that the future generation will take from these folktales that y'all are putting forward? Because, I mean, that's the purpose of it, right? To teach you something without really teaching you something, if that makes sense.
I think the main thing that came to my head straight away was being humble and not being greedy. I don't want to give away too much on the book, but that is definitely a theme from one of them. And I think, yes, we want to be aspirational, but we always need to remain humble and don't be too greedy.
That's a word. That's okay. Okay. Speaking to my life right now, not about me. What about you?
Yeah, you know, I, as honestly, take the folktale seriously. Folktales are like, you know, for me, it was what I grew up with. For a lot of Sierra Leoneans, I feel, or just Africans in general, we grow up with these proverbs and parables and folktales, and that's like our value teaching system, you know. In our local language alone, we talk in parables. You know, you could be speaking some general thing, and then out of nowhere they tell you, you know, okro, I'll say it in Creole, okro no de long passe master, which means, you know, don't mess with your elders. So it's like, I feel like if we take them as seriously as we take, both for parents and, you know, children as well, take them as seriously as we take the mainstream characters and cartoons that we're introduced to out here. I think we can learn a bit of our root culture, you know, our African culture, or just home culture, Black culture, whatever it is. Because it's all the stuff that our grandmothers knew, our grandfathers knew, our great-great-grandparents knew, they're in those things. And people like our grandfather work, you know, spend time to package those things in ways that we can enjoy. So I'd say, along with, as Nadine said, the messages that are in these books, pay attention to the carriers. Pay attention to the culture, the cultural aspect of it. Don't just see it as something that's, oh, these are folk tales, you know, these are things that you just read and then throw up on the shelf. Take them as something that you can learn as a child or an adult. Like these messages, like Nadine's, you know, as soon as Nadine mentioned the message in that one book, I started checking myself. I'm like, okay, what would my grandparents think? Like, am I being humble?
But know? Like, honestly, I feel that, because I was just like, oh, okay. She said, don't be humble, don't be greedy. You knew exactly what I needed to hear today, huh? Just threw that out there.
We will need it sometimes. We need it.
But I'm going to sit with that. I'm going to take it as a sign. Like, okay, message received. And we're gonna keep it moving. But that all that being said, like there, like you said, there are so many things that come in these folktales that you have to sit with and you think about, and like you said, not just read and throw it up on the shelf and forget about it. Like, so that being what it is, are you guys planning to continue to develop the stories into like more books, or are y'all just stopping at the two? He's looking at me, like, shaking his head. For those listening to the podcast, y'all not watching this on YouTube, he just straight looked at me and shook his head, like, of course not. What are you talking about?
Yeah, definitely. I think we've unleashed a dragon now, so we do definitely need to have talks, but we can't stop here. We can't.
Good. I don't want you guys to stop, because I am all for, like, just in general, having more children's books for Black children, just, like, in general, but definitely stories that are more than just the, like you said, I'm going to keep coming back to this word. This is my new word for the week. These Eurocentric stories where it's just like, you know, Black children are not centered and there is no, like, history or culture behind it or no real meaning behind it. Or I'll say even some of the lessons are very surface level, because I feel like some of the stories that I definitely got as a kid were just like, oh, golden rule, you should just be nice to everybody. I feel like being humble and not being greedy, that's a completely different level of, like, moral aptitude. I don't even know if I'm using that word right, but that's what I'm using today. Moral aptitude than just being like, oh, you should be nice, because I feel like that's very broad and very general and very vague. And to be real, you don't need to be nice to everybody. Stranger danger, right? Sometimes you need to be mean.
Exactly.
No, yeah. I think one thing about these folks is when we first started out, one of our challenges was, how do we interpret some of these original folktales into something that's relatable to now and also acceptable? Mm-hmm. Because I'll tell you, like, Africans generally, Africans are very straight and blunt. Like, they'll tell you, you know, well, you know, and that's it. So we kind of, when we read the stories, it was harsh. You know, it wasn't be nice. It was like, you know, I'm not going to, you know, go over what exactly it was, but it was enough for us to come back and say, are we sure we want to say that?
Nah, let's change it.
Yeah, let's you know, tweak it a bit, please. You know, so, you know, but we still left that straightness, even with the little bits of interpretations here and there, we left that straightness. And, you know, I love that about our stories. And honestly, it's not just African stories. I know I keep saying that. It's not just African stories. It's African-American folktales also, because there is a history of that. There is a you know, a theme, for African-American folktales. So I think we're just, you know, we tend to just be straightforward. It's like,
ain't nothing,
you know,
wrong with that. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Say what you mean and mean what you say, as they say in the modern day, say it with your chest, right?
Exactly.
But... that being said, we are coming up on the 30-minute mark, and there are two very specific questions that I want to be able to leave time for. The first one being, if you guys had the opportunity to give writing advice to anyone just starting out who maybe wants to write children's books or maybe wants to take work like you guys have that has already been published and presented in a new way, or even start something completely unique in their own, what advice would you have for them? And I'm gonna put the caveat that you guys cannot say the same thing, so y'all have to give different writing advice. So, go.
I think I would say is, take time and don't be too hard on yourself. It's not a science. I think when I first started working on the book with Akindele, I kept thinking, no, it shouldn't be like this. Or I was thinking about formatting, and I was thinking about things that are important, but not as important as I think I made them out to be. So I think it's just about being patient, and setting your own rules for how you want your book to be. So I think that's definitely one thing I'd say out there.
Yeah, I do agree, but with the caveat. you know, I think trust yourself. Trust yourself, you know. Know that, you know, you have what it takes, because it's, especially if it's something, a story that's related to your history, or your background, trust yourself, and apply yourself. But also, I would say also, you know, give credence to the carriers of those stories, or the history, or the narrative that you're trying to tell. Do your research. You know, look at their world through their eyes, and tell their stories the way they would have if they were here.
I like that. Honestly, you guys, if you're listening to this or watching this on YouTube, I second all of this advice, because it's something that you have to, like you said, trust yourself and don't get too caught up in the details when you're trying to write it for the first time. Like, you have to get it out of you before, and then everything else will come. Like, things will fall into place as you go. So I second all of that. Write it down, put it in a notebook, stick it on your computer, whatever you need to do, keep it with you. And the last question I have before you guys reintroduce yourselves to our listeners is, I know that this is a joint project, but are you guys planning to do any projects separately from each other? Because I know, Akindele, you are a poet and a writer apart from this. So I would love to know if you guys have any projects other than the children's books that y'all are working on jointly.
I have not got any other solo writing projects apart from the dissertation that I need to start for my master's. But I've always wanted to write a book. My mother's an author as well, and I definitely know I've got a book in me. So I feel like doing this project with Akindele has, you know, given me the confidence to hopefully one day do a solo project.
Absolutely. And I support it 100%. I don't know what you're going to write, when you're going to write it, but I support it 1,000%.
Thank you.
It's going to be lovely, for sure. It's going to be brilliant. I already know. I am working on a few things as well. Actually working on a graphic novel, or part graphic novel. And it's sort of history related as well. So that's in the works at some point.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay. Look, I get excited about books, you guys. I'm sorry. Okay, but that being said, will you guys please let our listeners know more, whatever you would like them to know? You have 2 minutes each to let them know where to find you, what's coming up for you, talk about your books, etc., etc. Whatever you think they should know, this is your time.
Excellent. I'm Akindele Decker. I was born in Sierra Leone, West Africa. I've been in the States for over 20 years now. Lived in Maryland, Texas, different places. I do a lot of work around history related, heritage related activities. This book, or these two books, are definitely two books that I've loved writing the past year and a half with my cousin Nadine. You can get these two books at SierraLeoneFolktales.com. www.SierraLeoneFolktales.com. We're also on Instagram as well, at Sierra Leone Folktales. And yes, we would love you to read this, so you can experience the same joy and excitement that we experienced writing it, and also reading it initially as well for my grandfather.
Awesome. Nadine, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that... Actually, I don't need to add anything, do I? Really?
Absolutely. If you can, if you want to. It's up to you. It's your 2 minutes.
I'm literally going to read your thing. So, yeah, my name is Nadine Decker, and Akindele is my cousin, and I am a co-author of the books on the Sierra Leone folktales. Akindele just said the website, and we also have our Instagram. So thanks for having us on this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that you guys came on. I'm so glad I had the opportunity to speak with you. Like I said, I am a huge supporter of your books, and I'm really looking forward to getting it, sharing it with my nephew. And if you are listening to this, obviously these folktales are children's stories, but I am a huge believer that a good children's book is also meant for adults. So get them for yourself, get them for the children in your life, get them for your local library or whoever, a stranger on the street. The point is, you can get this book, support Black authors, and you'll be helping to enrich somebody's life with a book that is going to matter to them. You never know. Hey, y'all. If you enjoyed the tips shared in this podcast episode and you're an author looking for some help with your next book, then let me tell you about my coaching services. I offer them through Written and Melanin, a company I created that's all about supporting Black authors. So if you're someone who wants some guidance on your next book, whether it's your first one or your latest one, then I'd recommend checking them out. I offer a free consultation for new clients, so don't be shy about reaching out. I'll walk you through every step of publishing your book, from narrowing down your target audience and figuring out the best way to distribute your book, to how to find a good editor, beta readers, price your book appropriately, and get it in front of readers, and answer any questions about publishing that you may have. The reality is, publishing a book yourself can be overwhelming, no matter how many times you do it. So if you're looking for some guidance and support, head to writtenandmelanin.com to see if I would be a good fit to help. So, that being said, you guys, that is it for this episode of the Written in Melanin podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening as Akindele, Nadine, and I share what we've learned on our journeys as Black authors. If you'd like to support this podcast, then please share it with someone you think may enjoy it. Join my Patreon at patreon.com/CM Lockhart or grab a copy of my book, We Are the Origin, from my website, cmlockhart.com. If you'd like to support Akindele and Nadine, then please purchase their books, review them, and follow them on social media. There are links in the show notes for everything. So, thank you again for listening, and until next time, I hope all your books are full of melanin. Bye, you guys!
Bye!